there isn't something special about the people that we call heroes. They just happen to have been in the right place at the right time, and they did something.
From the COIN Podcast Network studios in Portland, Oregon, this is Six Questions with Emily Burris and Ian Costello.
Well, hello there.
Well, hello.
How are you?
Tired.
Yay for tired.
It's been a long week, and not necessarily for anything bad. It's just been really busy.
Really busy, both life and work. And it just seems like, I guess, for the last 18 months or so, time has really lost most of its importance, or at least my understanding of time has certainly waned. I don't get why everything seems like it happened 10 minutes ago and 10 years ago all at the same time.
Yeah. Working as a journalist for the better part of the last decade, I have developed the wonderful habit of procrastination to its finest degree. It's not necessarily that I'm like sitting around doing nothing. It's just that I work purely off of like the most immediate need because I'm so used to daily deadlines. So then I have these really, really big stories creep up on me where like I've had this stuff for weeks and I could have been taking a little bit each day and logging my interviews and slowly assembling this piece. And instead, I've just been like, well, I'd rather do the other emails for the stuff this week. And like, I'll get to that later. And then, of course, I'm here pulling, you know, 12-hour days the 2 days before that this stuff is supposed to air because I don't know how to function like a normal person in a working world where you're not constantly cranking things out every day.
We're professional procrastinators. And I think, I don't know if it's a we, I'm addicted to that pressure a little bit.
Yeah.
And the rush that comes with it.
Yes. You feel like you work better that way. I told my therapist, I'm like, I don't know what's wrong with my brain. I don't know how to function in any other kind of time management. And that's probably not a good thing.
I don't know if there's another profession that comes as a quality skill or a quality attribute that you wish you had.
Right. Can you imagine your lawyer showing up on the first day of your trial saying like, okay, I think we're good. I was up till, you know, 3 a.m. I think I finished reviewing everything about your case. And you're like, when did you start? And they say yesterday.
I manage time very poorly, but I'm here for you now. So over the course of a couple months now doing these, I think we've had a lot of fun. And I think between Top Chef contestants, Sarah Hammond and Gabriel Pascuzzi and Ian Carmel, we've had some good opportunities to laugh and some good stories to tell along the way.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, Emily, this one's the most important.
Yeah.
And I don't say that to belittle the other conversations we've had at all. What you got to in your conversation here, everybody needs to hear it.
Well, thank you, Ian. I really, really enjoyed my conversation this week with Deborah Porta. She is the executive director of Pride Northwest, Portland's predominant LGBTQ community group resource, a wonderful organization at the forefront of many of the things that make Portland such an LGBTQ friendly city, a reputation that we have, I think, on an international level now.
It comes up several times in your conversation with her, the shared experiences that you and she and I just don't have. But to hear her shared experiences about getting to Portland and learning what it was to be in a different city when she grew up in Texas, and this idea that she had hidden herself for so long, and then to come out while she's here and then evolve into this role of leadership in such an important organization and advocacy group was a pleasure to hear, even though there were a lot of things that sounded like true struggle along the way.
Yeah, I don't think it's hyperbole to say that for Deborah and probably for a lot of people, her move to Portland was life-changing. One of the things that's important with this podcast, as we look for people who make Portland, Portland, is not just to find the people who were born and raised here, have been here their whole lives, you know, have done certain things for any certain amount of time, I think it's really important too to showcase the reasons why Portland has become a destination for all different types of people, and to show that no matter how long you're here, no matter why you came here, there are things about this city that pull people in, and all of that is contributing to what makes it so unique. Well, thanks for sitting down to talk with me today. I'm sure things are starting to get a little busy with June right around the corner.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's a much bigger year than we were actually expecting. So it's good.
Is it? Yeah. I mean, I think last year, you know, we were kind of at the height of things getting really rough with the pandemic, and Pride, you know, as we know it, it had to be kind of canceled and changed in a lot of ways. How are things looking for this year?
This year, it's a middle ground. We knew right after last year that there was no way we were going to be back to so-called normal this year. So we didn't even anticipate that. So we've been planning around things that we know we could make happen, no matter really what was happening with COVID. What we didn't want to do was get hopes up and get plans up and then have to back off again and have to cancel or change. And so we've done our planning around things that we knew we could make happen, whatever the restrictions happen to be.
Well, I like that. The planning ahead. I know we've all certainly gotten a little better at that in the last year, I think.
I think so.
Just trying to make plan A, B, C, all of that. Well, before we get into some of the stuff that's coming up here for Pride this year, I wanted to learn a little bit more about you and about your story. I mean, you are really the face of Pride Northwest in Portland here, but you actually used to live in Dallas, Texas, right?
Yep, that's where I'm from. Mm-hmm.
I'm so born and raised.
Oh yeah, I moved here from Dallas in 1997 when I was 30 years old. So I've lived here long enough now to be an official Oregonian, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm originally from Texas.
Yeah. So. No, I think you're in the club. I think you definitely are in the Oregonian club now. But so spending the first 30 years of your life in Texas, in you know, typically a more conservative area and at a different time in our country's history, what was that like growing up as a gay woman in Texas?
Well, I definitely was not out, and really I dealt with that by just not having a life, really. Dallas has and had at the time a queer part of town, Oak Lawn, that, you know, there was definitely a community there that I was not part of and was too afraid to be part of. That was back in the day when, you know, if you went to a Pride celebration and happened to be caught on camera somewhere, you were going to lose your job, all these things. So I just didn't participate. And I worked, really, actually, is what I did for a lot of years. I didn't come out, as it were, until after I'd been in Portland for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was the move to Portland, was your sexuality part of that move to Portland? Was that one of the reasons that you were drawn to this area?
You know, I think it was, but I don't think I realized it at the time.
Okay.
I moved up here with a friend really just to get a fresh start and to be someplace else. Mm. Dallas, there wasn't a lot because I didn't have a community there, whether it was queer community or not. I didn't have any community. It was very shut down. And so when the opportunity came along to come to a different part of the country and be in a different place, I took it.
Yeah. How was that for you getting to Portland and then being able to come out?
Well, I mean, it was definitely a huge cultural shift. Texas is a huge state and each corner is very different from the other corner. Dallas is among the better parts of that state, but it's still Texas. So, you know, being able to come to Portland and I definitely went through some culture shock in just how not diverse Portland is, first of all, especially 20 some odd years ago.
Yeah.
That was the very first thing I noticed, because Dallas is a very diverse place. So it took a lot of, just everything took a lot of getting used to. The weather took getting used to, the community, the population, the way the streets are laid out, which made me crazy for a long time. And just everything in general. My life obviously changed a lot after I moved here. And then over time, it just continued to do that, especially when I went back to school.
So what was it that made you feel like you were at a point where you felt comfortable enough then to be open and public with who you are?
Honestly, I attribute that really to going back to college. I learned that it doesn't, I went back when I was 36 years old. So I'm one of those non-traditional students, as I say. But I learned that it doesn't really matter how old you are when you go to college. If you haven't been before, you know, the whole world just opens up, that your perspective, all of those things. And so I think I just grew up really once I was able to go back to school and learn a lot and expand my own horizons and meet all kinds of people and all of that. And my own confidence grew as a person. And I got involved with the queer club on campus, of all things. And it just kind of rolled from there. And, yeah. And when I became involved with Pride Northwest in 2006, when I first started volunteering, it was over at that point. There was no such thing as not being out anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we're fortunate to live in a time now in this day and age where this younger generation of kids is growing up with access to the internet and social media. It's a double-edged sword, mm-hmm. right? The positive there is that I think they can hear stories and see from other people who've been through similar or different experiences of coming out or of, you know, really discovering and owning who they are. Mm-hmm. And I think back to, you know, previous generations and how hard that must have been to connect with people when you couldn't access some of that information without really meeting people, like you said, like in college, in a club or having that personal interaction.
That's huge. You're right that it's a double-edged sword, because there's no way that we can regret how much access and openness is available to our current generations. And at the same time, I think it also makes it difficult for the generations that came before to connect with mm-hmm. either direction, because young folks, since they didn't experience realistic here, there are still plenty of folks in the queer community who live in that isolation,
yeah,
and live in that sort of repressed place.
Yeah.
But it does actually, it's interesting connecting the generations together to learn about each other's experiences, because if you haven't lived through something, it's very difficult to imagine it. And, you know, just thinking about the very idea of being associated with other queer people being the reason that you lose your job or lose your housing or any of those things isn't necessarily, we don't experience it the same.
It seems like such a crazy thing now, but it was not mm-hmm. too far away, you know, or too long ago that there was a time where that was a real possibility, a real threat for people. And I don't mean to paint it with a broad brush and say that everything's fine now, because I'm sure everything's not. Even in this day and age, when you look at where the community is in Portland and where we as a society have gotten to, mm-hmm. you know, Portland has this reputation nationally and internationally as being a very progressive city. But I'm curious, what do you think, where is Portland getting it right? And then where are some of the areas that we still really need to work on?
Well, I think Portland and Oregon in general, where they've gotten it, where we've gotten it right is in the legal side of things, in terms of non-discrimination laws, housing laws, all of those pieces. The infrastructure for equity is sitting there, and Oregon's done a really good job of putting those pieces in place. It's the sort of matching that to the lived experience where we still fall short. Because you can have whatever law in place you want to have, but if you have a landlord that doesn't care and doesn't agree, we're still going to have community members who suffer in that process. Mm-hmm. Same thing with employers, same thing, particularly when it comes to the physical targeting of our community, because that still happens. We, you know, there's a case happening in Gresham right now of an investigation of an attack on a couple of gay gentlemen just a few days ago. So it's still the, honestly, I don't know the right word, the infrastructure of equality in terms of it's not illegal to be us anymore, which used to be the case. That's probably one of the greatest shifts across the generations is what does it even feel like to realize that you're illegal as a person? So those things are definitely places where we've gotten it right. But it's the catching up of what is it, what's the actual lived experience look like?
Yeah.
For that. Mm-hmm.
I think there's been a lot of focus, especially over the last couple of years here, of different racial disparities and especially in recent months, targeting of different racial and ethnic groups. And, you know, in a similar vein, right, I think we're looking at the ways in which there's individual behaviors that are still adding to a collective experience for groups of people that is just on a day-to-day basis stressful. It really, like, it really strikes me to hear you say, you know, that perspective of feeling that who you are is illegal. I mean, help someone who has not lived that experience kind of understand what kind of toll that takes on someone mentally and emotionally. And
well, just, you know, we are human beings are generally speaking very social people. We need each other to survive for the most part. And when you recognize that you as a person are at any given moment sort of open to being excluded from society and shunned and separated and all of those pieces, there's just this stress that sits there that comes with that. It's a complete uncertainty about what will happen tomorrow or even this afternoon or next week. It's just this sort of little underlying subconscious, although conscious to us, fear that sits there all the time. You know, and when you mention this, the focus, fortunately, on racial disparities and the inequities that are generations long, I do want to point out that, and not everyone's going to agree with me on this, it is difficult to just compare those two, to compare the history and the experiences of LGBTQ plus people mm-hmm. to, for example, the Black community. First and foremost, there's a lot of overlap. You know, there's no such thing as any community that doesn't also have us in it. Mm-hmm. And we forget that sometimes. And so it's layer of oppression on layer of oppression.
Yeah.
I don't want to make the mistake of giving the impression that we're talking about just individuals at this point. It is a very systemic issue, particularly when it comes to race. The LGBTQ plus community as a whole, I think, has been able to progress systemically because a lot of us are not also dealing with that other layer of identity. I'm not a Black person, and so I'm not going to experience what a queer Black person is going to experience.
Right.
So it's very complex, and our experiences are not the same.
Yeah.
It's just that you just feel, it's hard to describe how you feel knowing what it means to realize that you used to be illegal in this country.
Yeah.
Or you used to, for example, not even be considered a person. A lot of people still don't consider Black folks full people. And to me, that's just, I can't identify with that, but I know it's real and I know it exists.
Well, I think that's one of the things that, you know, that point of not being able to identify with it, but acknowledging that it's out there. I think that's something that a lot of people have had to grapple with more and more frequently in recent years, mm-hmm. right? To see these things happening to other people and realize now that you can't look away. You can't ignore other people's experiences
yep.
just because it's not something that you've ever personally observed.
Exactly. And that's our shared humanity. The entire premise of just because it's not something I experience doesn't absolve me from needing to pay attention to and respond to what's happening to other people. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that binds us together.
Is that one of the things that has really also kind of been, when you look at the LGBTQ community, part of what has spurred this movement to have an emphasis on visibility, you know, and when you look at Pride Month, and especially in recent years and in our culture, you know, people really trying to be out there and make a statement just to get it more on people's radar.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Pride itself was created to take our space in the public sphere. If you're out of sight, out of mind, so to speak, it's much easier to also be excluded and to be ignored and to be minimized and all of the things that go with that, because you're not allowed to fully participate as a human being and as a citizen.
Yeah.
So we have to remind the larger society that we're here because for two reasons. A, as I mentioned, it's much easier to exclude when you can ignore, and recognizing that even as things have progressed and things have improved generally for our community, the coming out process is still really scary. It's just scary no matter what, because you're grappling with all of these things about who even am I, what's going to happen, all of that stuff. And our visibility is something to lean on so that you know you're not by yourself.
Right.
I still remember years back when there was a young gay teenager that committed suicide over in Eastern Oregon, Jaden Bell. And I still to this day believe that if Jaden had been able to experience something like Pride or something like community, I think he'd have held on. It matters. I hear these stories every single year at Pride where that's their first Pride. And it could be a young person. It could be a teenager. It could be someone who's 65 years old. And you can just see it in their face that they're scared, but super excited because they're in a place they know that they're going to be okay. And how far we come in reaching equality and all the legal status and all those things obviously matter a lot, but it still doesn't take away from the fact that it is scary to come out and to even recognize this about ourselves because it's still, it's not normal in the eyes of larger society.
Right. No one ever has to come out as straight.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an extra hurdle and burden placed on LGBTQ folks. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Deborah and I are talking about this year's Pride Festival and a new tribute to Portland's LGBTQ community.
The Coin 6 Weather Team has the most accurate forecast in town, certified by WeatherRate. Coin 6 Weather, watching out for you.
Hi, this is Jeff Giannola from Coin 6 News, and I'd like to invite you to watch Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW. It's our award-winning newscast, 1 hour earlier at 10 o'clock. A full hour of the stories that are important to you and your family from the news team that's watching out for you. Plus, Portland's most accurate forecast certified by WeatherRate from Chief Meteorologist Natasha Stenbach. See why more people are switching to Coin 6 News at 10 on Portland CW. Watching out for you.
On that note of visibility and making a statement and being a sign for others, I know this week Pride Northwest unveiled plans for a new mural, and I was super surprised to learn that it's going to be the first mural in Portland honoring and celebrating LGBTQ folks in a city known for being very open and progressive. I'm just surprised that one does not already exist.
Well, in all honesty, when the opportunity came on our radar, I was surprised too.
Yeah.
I've learned over the years how separate the lived experience of Portland is from its reputation. So I can't say that I was shocked necessarily, but I was also surprised.
Yeah.
And that just made it even more important for us to support this project and to really move it forward. And so we're super excited that it's happening.
Yeah.
We're also looking at, you know, longer term planning around this mural. We're our goal is for it not to be the last, it's just the first. And educational opportunities, there's a whole lot of opportunity for conversation and learning and dialogue when you put something like this up.
Oh, it was certainly an educational opportunity for me. I know in putting together a story this week for COIN about this new mural project, it's called Never Look Away. And I spent some time just going online and reading about the different people that you've selected to portray in this mural. Mm-hmm. And, you know, local leaders and mentors and people within Oregon's LGBTQ community. And then also these nationally recognized folks from different places and times who've done a lot of very visible things to push this movement forward.
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting. I learned some new things about people that I had not heard of before. And I think that education is super important.
Oh yeah. When we were working with the production team to identify the folks who would be in the mural, it was really important to us, to all of us, because the idea had originally started as a queer heroes mural.
Mm-hmm.
From the perspective of Pride Northwest, our goal is to lift up our entire community. And when you call someone a hero, there's this sort of separation that starts to happen. There's this sort of mythologizing that happens. When it comes to thinking about who's going to look at the mural and who's going to see it and think about it, we want folks to see themselves, to see what they're, you know, the folks that we've chosen, as you mentioned, these are, most of them are not really well-known or famous, so to speak, people. But they have done so much work in moving our community forward. And that's what we want people to see, that it's that all of us can do something. There isn't something special about the people that we call heroes. They just happen to have been in the right place at the right time, and they did something. And we all have the opportunity to do that. We have just as much courage as they did and do. And so that's really what we want to have come across in who we've chosen for this mural, because all of these people at some point are just regular everyday people.
And so for anyone who hasn't had a chance to see some of the plans and renderings and learn a little bit about it, just real quickly, would you kind of walk me through who all is going to be on this wall?
Well, there are 8 people in the mural. It's huge. It's going to be downtown. Marsha P. Johnson. And I keep wanting to say Marsha, of course, but Marsha P. Johnson, of course, who is integral to the Pride movement that we have now. David Martinez, one of the co-founders of, at the time, Latino Pride, now Latinx Pride, has done so much work in particularly supporting queer youth of color, young people in education and beyond. Asa Wright is one of the co-founders of the Portland Two-Spirit Society, is an artist, does so much in uplifting and advocating for Two-Spirit community here in Oregon and beyond as well. Angelica Ross from Pose, she graced us with her presence at Pride a couple of years ago. Super, super kind woman. And, you know, there are several well-known trans activists and actors that we could have chosen. Angelica kind of made it to the top of that list in large part because of all of the other work that she's done in particularly lifting up and empowering trans women, Black trans women.
Yeah.
Aiden Dowling is an athlete, and he has broken all kinds of barriers and ceilings as a trans athlete.
Yeah. I remember how notable his cover on Men's Health was and, right. and just how many headlines that made. Yeah.
Kathleen Sadat. We could do an entire show on Kathleen Sadat and the impact that she's had. She was one of the primary organizers of the very first outdoor, and probably before that, outdoor pride celebrations back in 1976. And that's just one small part of what Kathleen has done in Oregon over the last 40, 50 years. Lynn Nakamoto, she's on the Oregon Supreme Court, queer woman of color, breaking boundaries, breaking ceilings, all of those things. Mm-hmm. Rupert Kennard is same thing. He broke through all kinds of boundaries as an artist, as a comic designer, community advocate, all of those things. So they all just really bring very specific contributions to the table and just their impact as people on the community around them and at large.
What's the timeline? I know things have been so turned around in the pandemic. When are you hoping to have this project finished?
The project is scheduled to begin production in early June, so just in a few weeks. And the goal is to, obviously, depending on what Portland weather does, it's about a 3-week production,
okay,
give or take. So the goal, you know, end of June, early July. We, because of COVID, we're not planning a large-scale unveiling celebration right now. We're looking, hopefully, to the fall for something. And in the meantime, you know, when it's finished, we'll obviously do a, you know, press conference and ribbon cutting and this, just a small thing. And then hopefully a big shindig in the fall.
That's awesome. And it sounds like it's fun that it'll be being created as a lot of things are happening this year for Pride. So let's talk a little bit about plans for Portland Pride in 2021. What can people look forward to?
Well, we have a couple of things happening. We are filming a virtual Pride parade. We've rented the Portland International Raceway, and we'll actually be filming here in just a couple of weeks, and then broadcasting on, we're creating a show between the parade and some performances for a virtual broadcast on June 20th, which would have been our typical parade day for this year. So that's pretty exciting. We're glad to do that one. We are also, and we do have an in-person event happening, and it is a 2-day mini film festival in partnership with the directors of QDoc, the Queer Documentary Festival here in Portland. We are super excited about this because it's a new relationship for us. And the original idea had just been, let's do some drive-in movie nights. And then we talked to QDoc and we were off and running. And now it's 2 full days of new releases, some older releases. It's going to be down at the lot at Zydell Yard with distance seating pods, concessions, beverages. You know, it's just a really nice space.
It is.
It's a very nice space.
I went down there for one of Darcel's drive-in shows. It was so much fun. Yeah.
So we're really excited about that because it's new. We're looking forward to, let's see if we want to make a film festival every year now.
Yeah.
And it'll just be really nice to as creative as we've all gotten with the virtual world, there nothing beats being able to at least be close enough to wave at each other, you know, and to be in that space together.
Yeah.
And then there's a selection of other virtual offerings throughout that week as well. It's starting on June 12th, going all the way through the 20th. We have a full list on our website, full breakdown. Mm-hmm. Some of it's still being updated. So we're pretty excited about it. It's a pretty robust, given the fact that we're still in the middle of COVID, it's a pretty robust schedule for us.
Totally.
Happy about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of opportunities for people to take part at whatever level they feel comfortable too, which
exactly.
I think that's great. That's mm-hmm. great.
Oh yeah.
So I wanted to ask you this, and there's a part of me that, you know, I always feel frustrated at myself when I have to ask questions like this, because I know that it shouldn't be on you to do all of this work. But as someone who is straight, on behalf of many of our listeners who I know are going to be listening to this, I wanted to ask you about ways to be a better ally and what can we do to help the community? Because as you mentioned, you know, I think a lot of progress can happen on big macro levels, but that day-to-day micro person-to-person stuff is what's still making things really difficult in many people's lives.
It does. Really, you know, being an ally or being a better ally to LGBTQ plus folks it's about educating yourself on what our lived experiences tend to look like. Recognizing that a lot of what is out in the public about LGBTQ plus folks tends to be a stereotype of one kind or another, and that we have the same at a very sort of basic level, we're people. And
yeah,
you know, this may sound a little bit blunt. I don't wonder about your personal life and what you're doing in your personal
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of really where it starts is if you're not going to wonder about and ask someone about their personal life, unless they're queer, then that's the starting point. Because if the only reason you're interested in what they're doing is because they're different, then, you know, you might want to think that through a little bit because we're just not. We're
yeah.
not different as people. We're not, you know, who it is that we spend our lives with or don't spend our lives with isn't really any different than someone who's not queer identified.
Yeah.
The people just look different, right?
Yeah. That's a good reminder. If you would feel weird if someone was asking you about it, then don't ask other people about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh yeah. And at the same time, also learning that, you know, it's not that easy. And LGBTQ plus folks face barriers every day in their professional lives, personal lives, economic access, all of those things. And that we're all different. You know, I run into this a lot where there's this assumption that somehow or another, we either all know each other or are related in some way in terms of community.
Mm.
And that we all have the same opinion or the same perspective. Mm-hmm. And really and truly, the only thing that binds us together is this lived experience of an identity. We have very different opinions, very different backgrounds, very different cultural norms, all of those pieces. We're not all the same person. So I think that's another important piece, is just to recognize that we're all individuals.
Absolutely. And have that guiding the way you approach these situations.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you like one more, just a couple fun rapid fire questions about like Portland, things you like to do and where you like to go. Where is your favorite place to go in Portland if you're going out for a meal? Give me your restaurant recs.
My wife and I usually try and look for small independent places. We love Middle Eastern food. We love Queen of Sheba over on MLK. It's really nice. We don't get to go very often. Mom and pop individuals, independent places. Mm-hmm. When we don't go out a whole lot, actually. We're pretty homebody.
Well, no one does this year.
But yeah, there's not really a very specific place. We actually kind of like to try new places.
Yeah.
And see what's up there.
Mm-hmm. That's how I am too. My goal is not to go to the same place too many times. Because then I know I'm getting in a rut.
Exactly.
And I know you're a fur mom. So do you have a favorite Portland dog park or park to go hiking in?
Well, we're cat people.
Oh,
we're both. At some point we will probably get a dog. We're just too busy right now.
My research was wrong. I apologize.
Okay. Honestly, when we want to go walking, hiking, et cetera, we usually go out into the gorge, normally on the Washington side.
Uh-huh.
It's less crowded most of the time. But really, or we'll go to the waterfalls, especially the smaller ones, and usually hike in those areas out in the green.
Can't go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And your favorite thing to do on just a rainy Portland Friday night?
Stay at home, honestly, and we do crafting of different kinds.
Oh, cool. Like what?
Well, we have actually gotten into cement projects, candle holders, planters, some other sort of miscellaneous cement art creations. I'm not sure if there's a name for them. We have started making candles, and we've been painting for a good while. I'm not any good at it yet, but I'm learning.
That's so cool. And were these pre-pandemic activities, or have they, you kind of picked them up in this last year?
We've kind of picked them up in the last year. We've always done things off and on, but you know, COVID really created a space where we could slow down and have time to actually do things. My wife and I both work a lot in pretty demanding jobs, and COVID really sort of allowed us to have time to do some things without being stretched all over the place.
What's one thing from the pandemic, from this time over the last, you know, year and a half or so, that you hope to take with you into our, if I hate this word, but for lack of a better word, new normal? What do you want to carry with you from this pandemic time?
I can only speak for myself. I want to take the ability to slow down, which is something that's not easy for me to do. I have been a workaholic my entire adult life. And so now that I've learned more about what it means not to do that, I'd kind of like to not go back there. And I've also learned to really appreciate having friends.
Yeah.
One of the side effects of not being out and really living a life where you don't create a network because you're all closed in is you also don't have friends. You don't have those connections. And over the years, I've made some really good friends in this community, and COVID has allowed us to appreciate each other more, even if we're not spending more time together.
Definitely. Well, and I think there's a lot of people out there who will be very appreciative of the fact that even though Pride looks a little different again this year, you guys are still working really hard to create those ways for people to connect, even if they can't connect in person.
Pride will always happen. It just may look different. Pride will always happen.
Well, thanks so much for talking with us today, Deborah. I really appreciated it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate you too.
So I love that one of the things, I'm not the only one who wants to take this away from our time in the pandemic, is just that ability to slow down a little bit and spend some more time, you know, at home and focused on the people in your life that really matter. Now that we've really had this sense of connection kind of reinforced in some of the ways it's been taken away. And I definitely think it's going to be a challenge over these next few months because we want to get back out there and reconnect physically with so many people that we haven't seen for so long. It's going to be tough to pace ourselves and get back into that rhythm.
She was very introspective in that point about realizing that she may have been overextended without realizing at the time she was overextended. And now there's been this break where we've, as you said, kind of had a chance to recenter and refocus on the things that are in our immediate surroundings and the people we chose to live with. I got the feeling that she felt she was going to be better coming out of this.
Yeah, I think so. Which makes me sit here and think, like, how can I be better coming out of this? Like, I think especially, I mean, like we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast, Ian, just how busy all of a sudden things felt this week and how crazy the pace of life starts to be kind of creeping back up and creeping back into the day to day. And I think I still need to work on that a little bit too. You know, like I said, like learning how to say no. It's not that I've gotten any better at it. I just didn't have anything to practice on for over the past year.
Right, right. I felt one of, back to kind of what we were talking about at the beginning about you and I and she just simply cannot have the same shared experience. I thought one of her most telling quotes in your whole conversation was, if you haven't lived through something, it's very difficult to imagine it.
So I think you can look at that perspective and reflect on that in a lot of different ways. And I don't bring this up to try and equate or empathize in any way or invalidate in any way. But I hope that people can sit and reflect on the last 18 months or so, you know, that we've had in this pandemic and the daily uncertainty, the threat to our health and finances and family, the constant stress that a lot of us felt we were living in, and the physical and mental and emotional toll that that took on all of us, and sit and reflect on that and look at maybe some of the ways in which you could, you know, not necessarily empathize, but sympathize with some of the things that marginalized groups have experienced in their life and grow your sense of humanity a little bit. The next best thing to having a lived experience that you can relate to is to truly sit down and listen to someone else sharing theirs.
You're absolutely right, Emily. And as we come out of this, it's going to be good to see some things returning to something that resembles normal. And pride is a part of that. And not to toot our own horn a little bit, but this year, COINS playing a big role in the events surrounding pride.
Yeah, we are. I'm so excited that we have you know, partnered up with Pride Northwest here now. We're one of their media supporters. And this year, we're actually going to be broadcasting that virtual parade that Deborah mentioned. So they're doing a virtual Pride parade this year. We're going to be broadcasting it on COINS 6, June 20th. That's a Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. And then if you miss that, we'll have a rebroadcast on Portland CW on the 20th from 7 to 8 p.m. So a very cool chance for everyone to take part in a little bit of pride, no matter where you are.
That's a fun parade.
It is so much fun.
Do you like parades?
I'm very picky with parades. If I had to...
How can you be picky about parades?
Because maybe it's because I grew up in Orlando and I've been to Disney too many times. Oh. And now I'm like jaded to the parade thing, which is so annoying to say, I know. But if I had to pick like a favorite kind of parade, I think pride parades are number one for me. It's just so fun. There's an energy that comes from being in a place of love and acceptance and celebration and seeing people feeling like they're in a community and in a safe space. I just think it's great.
Thank you for listening to the COIN Podcast Network. You can listen to more great COIN podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.